Hi, this is Sybil. There's a voice I'd really like to hear on Daughters of Mormonism, and that's the voice of our lesbian sisters. If you are lesbian and would be willing to share your experience, would you please contact me? Whether you're single, in a relationship, in a traditional marriage, with children, in or out of the church, I would love to hear from you. I can take measures to protect your identity. Please email me at daughtersofmormonism@gmail.com. Thanks. I hope to hear from you. Welcome to another episode of Daughters of Mormonism. I'm your host, Sybil. Today, we'll hear more from one of our panelists, Jenny B. She's going to talk about symbols in paganism and elsewhere that enhance understanding of the female divine. Welcome back, Jenny.
Hi.
Will you start by telling us about how Heavenly Mother came to be part of your life?
Absolutely. I know that a lot of people are making or have, you know, have tried to make Heavenly Mother part of their lives. It's been something where they felt like they wanted to find her. They sought her out for whatever reason it was. And that was not the case for me. I actually never really went looking for her. I remember being a kid and singing Oh My Father at church and thinking, cool, there's a mother. That's logical. That fits together. I like that. Now we're moving forward. And I was really just okay with it. I was okay with the idea that she's there and we don't have to talk about her to know that she's there. I was really okay with it. I never sought her out. But just recently, this has just been a couple of months ago, I guess about 4 months ago that this happened. I had recently begun sort of actively studying paganism. I was reading some books and things. And on a particular night, my baby was just having a hard time getting to sleep. And so I was rocking him and walking with him and singing to him and trying to get him to calm down. And one of the songs that I tend to sing to my babies is How Great Thou Art, because I know all the words. And so it's easy to sing that in the dark without a book. And as I was sitting there singing it, I got to the third verse and I was thinking about our understanding of God as being both a mother and a father. And I was looking out the window and there was this beautiful crescent moon out there. And I was thinking about the pagan symbol of the moon as representing the goddess. And so I was thinking about the mother side of God in specific. And then I got to this verse and it just completely overwhelmed me because in my head I heard the words this way. When I think that God, her son not sparing, sent him to die, I scarce can take it in. And I had never, ever thought about the atonement from a mother's perspective. I'd always heard, oh, how hard for a father to send his son and so on. But I'm a mother and I have sons. And the thought of it being one of my sons, it suddenly became so much more personal. The concept of the atonement just, you know, hit me in a way that it never had before. I felt like Heavenly Mother sort of reached out to me to teach me that about the atonement. And I realized that connecting with her could make my life richer. I could understand more things and better. And partly because of my interest in paganism, like I said, it was just beginning at the time. But that has helped me to see that there have been many symbols of her, and there are many things that can be symbols of her. And so since that sort of initial introduction, I guess, I've come to feel like I see her and find her everywhere. And it's like my eyes have been opened and suddenly I realize that she's everywhere and that she always has been and that I just never noticed her before.
What are some of the other places that you have seen her and noticed her since this experience?
Well, like I said, it's the symbols. And there are a lot of things that can be symbols. Whatever is significant to you can be a symbol for you. But some of the really common things are, like I said, things like the moon, which is in some cultures, the sun was female and the moon was male. But in a lot of the Western ones, the sun was male and the moon was female. And so, you know, the moon as a symbol of the goddess or of our Heavenly Mother, that was the symbol that sort of brought me to her in the first place, because that was sort of what was there at the time and made me think of her. You know, it's beautiful. The waxing and waning, the cycles, you know, have a link to femaleness and femininity. The classic goddess symbol used in paganism shows the moon in its three phases. It has a waxing crescent and then a full moon and then a waning crescent. And it represents the three aspects of the goddess, the threefold goddess, the maiden mother matriarch or the maiden mother crone. You know, that's a symbol or a representation of womanhood as well as of goddesshood. And so I think that's something that a lot of people find they can relate to on some level. And I think that that's a really multifaceted symbol. Mother Earth is a classic symbol, you know, the Earth goddess. And it's usually a sky father that goes, you know, a sky god that goes with the Earth goddess. In some cases, actually, that's reversed too, with an Earth god and a sky goddess. And she's called the Queen of Heaven. And I like that name in terms of believing in Heavenly Mother as being the queen or the goddess in heaven. I think Queen of Heaven is a fabulous title for her.
Can you give us kind of an idea of what you mean by a symbol so that we can see more what we're doing with each of these that you're going to bring up?
You know, a symbol is something that, you know, Christ always taught in parables or stories, and those are symbols. And the temple's full of symbols. Symbols are basically a simple thing that can help us remember or understand something that's more complex. And so there's a lot of symbols in the world. I mean, a lot of people wear a ring as a symbol of being married. A marriage is a huge, elaborate, complex thing, and a ring is a very simple thing, but it's a symbol that we all recognize as having that particular meaning. And so there are also rings that aren't wedding rings that just don't mean anything particular, or maybe they do to the person who wears them, but not to anybody else. And so I think that a symbol means as much or as little as you want it to mean. It can be a very personal thing. Sometimes finding a symbol that someone else uses or suggests or whatever can become personally meaningful, and so we have a lot of shared symbols. But, you know, a lot of times symbolism is very individual too. And the point is that it's a simple thing, like I said, that can help us understand or help us remember something that is bigger or that is more complex.
I can see why this would be especially helpful for the divine feminine, since in the Mormon church, we acknowledge that there is, for example, a mother in heaven, but we really don't say or do much with that doctrine. And so I can see how having a basket of symbols could help to connect with aspects of church doctrine that perhaps aren't really spoken of or looked at very much.
Well, and as we go down this list here, we'll see that some of these symbols are things that are integral parts of our faith, of our religion, of what we do. And I guess for me, you know, people always talk about how the church is silent about Heavenly Mother. We don't really talk about her. And when I look at some of these symbols, I can say, but this symbol is very present. And so we may not be speaking her name, but I see this symbol. And so I am still getting the message of her, even if her name wasn't spoken. And so I feel like she is much more present than we maybe realize. I think she's there, and just that sometimes she's there in symbolic form. Like I said, I've become more aware of her all around me, but within the church too, because I see these symbols now, and instead of thinking of them as themselves, I think of them as being symbols of her. A classic one is wisdom. There are some classic goddesses of wisdom, Sophia or Athena. And wisdom appears quite a lot in the Bible. There are several specific chapters in Proverbs that talk about wisdom, and they use the female pronouns. And that's one symbol that's been suggested as being a symbol of mother. And so if you read those verses and just substitute the word mother instead of wisdom, suddenly here's Heavenly Mother in the scriptures. And there are a couple that I've read in that context, or, you know, with just that one little word switch, that I have found very meaningful because, you know, because of seeing them that way. And so, like I said, I have the, oh, but we do talk about her. We just kind of do it in code.
Will you read us one?
Yes, I do. Actually, I have one here that I wanted to read. This is from Proverbs 8. I sort of pulled several verses from throughout the chapter. So it's in order, but I've left out a couple verses. Otherwise, it'd be really long. This is from Proverbs chapter 8. And like I said, all I've done is I've substituted mother for wisdom in just a couple of places. And otherwise, I've left it word for word. I, mother, dwell with prudence and find out knowledge of witty inventions. Counsel is mine and sound wisdom. I am understanding. I have strength. I love them that love me, and those that seek me early shall find me. The Lord possessed me in the beginning of his way, before his works of old. I was set up from everlasting, from the beginning, or ever the earth was. When there were no depths, I was brought forth. When there were no fountains abounding with water, before the mountains were settled, before the hills was I brought forth. While as yet he had not made the world, nor the fields, nor the highest part of the dust of the world, when he prepared the heavens, I was there. When he set a compass upon the face of the depth, when he established the clouds above, when he strengthened the foundations of the deep, when he gave to the sea his decree that the waters should not pass his commandment, when he appointed the foundations of the earth, Then I was by him, as one brought up with him, and I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing in the habitable part of his earth. And my delights were with the sons of men. Now therefore hearken unto me, O ye children, for blessed are they that keep my ways. Hear instruction, and be wise, and refuse it not. Blessed is the man that heareth me, watching daily at my gates, waiting at the posts of my doors. For whoso findeth me findeth life, and shall obtain favor of the Lord.
That's very nice.
One word substitution in there is all. And I found this whole depth of meaning. There are several chapters in Proverbs that talk about wisdom that way. And sometimes it's capitalized even, which personifies it even more.
Tell us a little bit more about wisdom or Sophia.
There are a lot of ancient gods and goddesses, old traditions and so on. And the goddess that's associated with the Hebrew god El is the goddess Asherah. I'll come back to that and talk more about that specifically. But there are a lot of us who feel like Asherah is probably the most accurate name for our Heavenly Mother because, like I said, that's the goddess that's associated with El or Elohim, which is the name that we've given to our Heavenly Father or that we have, you know, ascribed to him. And so if Asherah is Elohim's wife, then obviously that's our mother. And one of the translations of Asherah is wisdom. And so that's one of the reasons why some of us, you know, look for the references to wisdom in the scriptures, and then we read them as references to mother. And like I said, there's a lot in Proverbs. It's found in some other places. And there are a lot of ancient goddesses, you know, Athena or Sophia, Minerva, some of those other goddesses were goddesses specifically of wisdom. Something that I learned as I was learning about some of the ancient goddess traditions was that in a lot of the traditions, the goddess was the scribe of heaven. So she was the recorder, and therefore she was the one that knew things. And so even if she wasn't specifically given the title of being goddess of wisdom or of being wisdom personified, she was the one who was the keeper of the wisdom. You know, we have all of our family histories and our book of life and our record kept in heaven and all of those things. And I think some of those things really tie back to mother as the recorder and the keeper of knowledge and of wisdom. So I want to go back a little bit to talk about names. I read a book by Merlin Stone called When God Was a Woman, and she discusses ancient goddesses and ancient goddess traditions. The book is 30 or 40 years old. And from what I understand, a lot of her anthropological information has been disproven. But the one thing that I know that she does have correct is the names of these goddesses, because these are things that they have found, you know, in ancient things that they've dug up. And one of the things that really, probably the biggest thing that jumped out to me from this book was the names of all of the goddesses. You start with Asherah, but then there's Ashtoreth and Ishtar, Isis, Inanna, Athena, Astarte. They all have these really similar sound. And that leads me to think that there's a common source. And I believe that the common source of all of these goddess names is an ancient understanding of and a belief in our Heavenly Mother. I think they knew something. You know, it gets garbled with time or with retelling. But I think that there's a reason that all those names have so much in common. Some people might recognize names like Ashtoreth or Ishtar as being the heathen, pagan, you know, the bad goddesses in the Bible where the prophets were supposed to, you know, the people were supposed to go cut down the groves of trees and chase out the bad people who were worshiping these goddesses and things. And I'm not completely sure. I think there's a couple of different understandings of that. One may be that later translators were trying to discredit the divine feminine, and so they sort of translated it to sort of put that pitch on it. But it may also be that there were some people who had begun worshiping her at the expense of Father and of Christ. And, you know, I don't think there's meant to be a trade. I think it's good to find them all together. But, you know, it may be that there were ancient peoples who had forgotten about God in their zeal for worshiping Mother. You know, that they'd kind of gotten lost. They'd gotten too much of a good thing and gone too far.
That kind of makes me wonder, is that where we're at today, except on the flip side, that we have been so zealous in our worship of Father and Son that we have forgotten Mother?
Yeah, that we've lost the balance.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think, and I doubt that it was then either, but I don't think that it's an intentional or a malicious thing. I think it's probably a product of society and habit as much as anything. I generally don't think that people as a whole are malicious. I think that a patriarchal society would naturally feed a patriarchal view of religion. So it's no surprise to me that we've lost sight of her. But I do think that the loss of balance is a really sad thing, at the least.
Yeah, I think that loss of balance can cause far-reaching effects that maybe we sometimes don't want to acknowledge. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that right now there is a very large resurgence in many different aspects of culture that are reaching back to reclaim mother and divine feminine and goddess and so forth. So this is very interesting.
So the one thing that I found in common between all of these different goddesses, whatever name it was that there were certain traits in common. I mentioned things like the wisdom, the mother, the nurturer. In many cases, she is the mother earth, or she is the creator of the earth or of the sky or of all of them. And that goes back a little bit to the motherliness in terms of the source of life. But I think it's a good reminder of power too, you know, the creation of the world. And like those verses from Proverbs where she talks about being with God in the beginning during the creation. I do think she was there. I think that some of these old stories and old traditions know that she was there, that message is there. Another thing that I think is very healthy to remember is that all of these goddesses were sexually active and they enjoyed it. So far as I recall, they all had, you know, a consort or a husband of some sort. And, you know, many of them had children, but that wasn't their main focus. You know, the fertilities and festivals and things, I think it may have gotten carried too far. Like I said, you know, maybe they got caught up in one thing and took it farther than was perhaps appropriate. But these fertility goddess festivals, I think, were based in a healthy understanding of sexuality as an important part of womanhood. So I wanted to come back to Asherah in specific. And that is a name that actually appears in the Old Testament. And it appears usually with, actually not capitalized, it appears with a little A. And in the Old Testament, the Asherah or the Asherim were groves of trees, and they were considered holy places. I think about a particular sacred grove that we have in our stories. And I think that there is something about nature and about trees, that there is a sacredness in the natural space. In the later parts of the Bible, the Asherah or Asherim were carved poles that they actually put in the temples around the altars. I haven't found a lot of detail about this, but from what I can gather, it sounds like they were symbols of those groves of trees. Sort of a, here's a little portable tree we can bring inside our temple and move it around with us as we go. I don't know, maybe those little ficus trees they always have in the ward foyer are sort of like that. See, she's everywhere if you're looking for her.
I've never thought of that before.
We have trees. But like I said, it's my understanding that the poles would represent actual trees. There are ancient carvings of many goddesses. And if you look up carvings of Asherah in specific, you'll find that she has a head and breasts and arms, but that her whole lower body is sort of stiff. Her legs aren't even separated. It's all sort of together, and it looks a lot like a tree trunk. She's very tree-like. And so I think that the tree symbolism for Asherah in specific was very prominent, even in ancient times. You know, after I saw the image of the Asherah statue, the figurine, I made a connection with that female symbol that we have, the little, you know, circle with the kind of line and cross under it, which is a much newer symbol. It's a Roman symbol. I think it's supposed to be Aphrodite's mirror. But I guess it'd be Venus if it's Roman. But the connection that I made was that it has that head and arms, and it's sort of stiff and straight. It doesn't really have feet. And it reminded me, you know, that little female symbol reminded me of the Asherah statues. And I thought that was interesting to look at it from the perspective of Asherah is the quintessential female, sort of the ultimate female. And yet the symbol of her is the symbol for all of us. So we all have that little bit of her in us, or that potential to become like her. I don't know. It sounds a little corny now when I say it all out, but that hit me kind of hard as here's the ultimate example of femaleness. And we have the same symbol for us as we have for her. That was a symbol that I don't think I got from anyone else. That was just one that I found that was meaningful to me.
It's interesting because trees are such an extensive symbol in so many ways, in mm-hmm. so many cultures and religions. Mm-hmm. So I'll let you talk more about the trees.
Right. I mean, trees in general, they're the groves of trees, can be seen as a symbol of our Heavenly Mother. There was a specific tree, though. There's an article from the Maxwell Institute that is called Nephi and His Asherah, and it talks about Nephi and the vision of the tree of life. And the author suggests that the tree of life in specific is a symbol of our Heavenly Mother, that the tree represents the love of God, and that is our Heavenly Mother. They're again in code, I guess. But I thought that was really interesting because there are cultures all over the world that have tree of life legends, and they're very sacred legends. My dad told me a story of when he was on his mission in South America, and they met a man who was a weaver, and he made tapestries, and he would talk to the indigenous people there and, you know, and learn their old stories, and then he would weave tapestries depicting their stories. And he had this one particular tapestry that was hanging there in his home. And he said, this is a story that they would not tell me for years. It took me years to earn their trust before they would tell me this story. And it's their most sacred and significant story. And he said, so I'm just going to tell you this part right here. This is the tree of life. And of course, these two young elders smiled and proceeded to tell him the rest of the story. And he was just absolutely dumbfounded. And he said, you know, I'm not interested in your church at all, but I have got to have a copy of that book. I will pay any price. I need that book. You know, I think it's significant that if you look at that tree of life as a symbol of mother, that, like I said, cultures have held that sacred for millennia. That's a very old and very sacred symbol and story and concept. Something else that occurred to me was that in Nephi's vision, and this isn't mentioned in the article, this is my own thing, but that in Nephi's vision, the people in the building, you know, the great and spacious building, were mocking and pointing fingers at the people who had found the tree. And I think sometimes about how sometimes we get the, oh, Heavenly Mother, well, we're not supposed to talk about her, shh. And yet we're saying we've found this amazing thing and it's broadened our understanding of deity and of ourselves. And we know that we have something wonderful and beautiful and good and important here. And other people are saying, well, I don't have that, so it can't be that cool. And shh. And, you know, they'll kind of look down on us or make fun of us for our attachment to our Heavenly Mother. That just struck me as another parallel there in the vision. Something else that was in that article there, you know, the Nephi and his Asherah talked about some specific trees, such as olive trees or almond trees, that have been symbols of her at various points. And so then their fruits, just like the fruit of the tree of life, the fruits of these other trees are by extension representatives of her as well. Thinking about the olive tree, that's something that comes up a lot. And I was thinking in particular about olive oil being the primary product of an olive tree. And we use olive oil all the time in the church. That's what we use for our blessings and our healings and our temple anointings. It's all olive oil. You know, when we talk about the connections between women and the priesthood and healings and some of those things, maybe we do have a little bit of mother in the middle of our priesthood ordinances and we just haven't seen her there.
It's a really interesting idea.
And, you know, I realize there's a whole other conversation that can be had in terms of, you know, females and priesthood and all of that. But I think that sometimes realizing that some of these other symbols can be indicators of mother or maybe of where mother is. I think sometimes we can find that maybe she is there. The symbols can help us to see her in places where we might not have recognized her before because she wasn't there implicitly. But she is still kind of there if we are willing to see her there. I think that's one of the big things about symbols is that it's what we're willing to see. Some things are really in your face and some things are more delicate, I suppose. And I've always thought that Mother is probably a very graceful sort of woman. It seems to make sense to me that maybe she wouldn't be as loud or in your face and that maybe she leaves her fingerprints everywhere and her symbols everywhere. But maybe she doesn't leave her calling card with her name on it because she's there if you want to see her. But if you don't recognize her for what she is, then you'll walk right past and miss it. Another symbol is that Asherah is sometimes referred to as a water or an ocean goddess. And the ocean is a source of life far beyond even what the earth is. There are so many things that live in oceans. It just puts the land to shame. And of course, there are the tides and the cycles, which are also related to the moon, and the moon and cycles are both feminine connections. And something that we'll get to in a minute is temples as a symbol of our Heavenly Mother. And there is water found at many, I don't know if it's all, but at least many of our temples have water features, whether it's some kind of a a reflecting pool, or I grew up near the Seattle Temple, and they actually had a series of pools with sort of little waterfalls between them, cascading pools. And so water is found at many temples. And it's particularly significant if you think about baptism. A lot of people say that baptism is a washing clean, and that is not what the scriptures say. The scriptures say that baptism is symbolic of death and rebirth, birth as a new person. And so if you look at water as being a symbol for our Heavenly Mother, then we enter the water and we are within it. We are within her. We are born forth from the water, just like when we are born forth from the waters of our earthly mother's womb. You know, I think that's a really beautiful tie-in of birth and rebirth and the water and the mother imagery that's there connecting them.
One other thing that crossed my mind is when you're talking about the tides mm-hmm. being pulled in the cycle by the moon, and the tides and the moon both being female symbols. Mm-hmm. Women are also pulled by the tides and by the moon. We cycle with them.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of women do. Not all women.
No, but we are.
Women do.
Yeah, we are still moved by those same forces, whether mm-hmm. we're in sync with them or not. We are still right. moved by them,
right?
Which I think is fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I definitely think that's one of the big reasons why people latched onto the moon very early on as a goddess symbol, as a female symbol, you know, because of that, you know, not just the changing over the course of the month, but the, you know, that women, many women are in sync with the moon, with the cycles of the moon. So the temple, Kevin Barney wrote an article, How to Worship Our Mother in Heaven Without Getting Excommunicated. He talks about several symbols. He talks about Asherah and he talks about trees and some of those things. But one symbol that he proposes is the temple. He comes up with this because the Hebrew words that are associated with Asherah's name translate to sanctuary and holy place. And he said, you know, what more holy place is there than the temple? The temple is a place for learning and teaching, which it ties back to the sort of mothering, nurturing, you know, aspects of our Heavenly Mother or motherhood in general. A lot of temples are decorated with tree motifs. And I think maybe you could even see them as sort of a modern version of the ancient groves. I grew up, like I said, near the Seattle Temple, and there's a particular carving shape on the front and sides, you know, on the outside of that temple, which was meant to imitate the trees there in the Pacific Northwest. I don't remember where I learned that it was specific and intentional, though, that they wanted the temple to resemble the trees on the outside. You know, I think when we remember the tree motif ties back to Mother, and, you know, there's the water on the grounds, and that ties back to Mother. And within the temple, we have the stories about creation and growth, and that also has, you know, a maternal link. One of the most blatant symbols, I think, is that we can literally go inside the temple and be fed, be nurtured, be taught, like an infant in its mother's womb is literally fed and nurtured and taught by Mother and is literally within the mother. And so I think that the temple can be a fairly potent symbol of our Heavenly Mother. The temple is one of the places, I think, sort of the primary place where we are taught about becoming queens and priestesses and goddesses ourselves. So I think it's one of the places where we are taught about her, about what our mother is, and about how we can be like her, I think more clearly than in other church settings. There's a more open discussion of the balance where the men can become kings and priests and the women can become queens and priestesses. The temple's the only place where I've ever heard the word priestess used in an LDS context. And so, you know, I think that there are little bits of Mother shining through in some of that.
Yeah, that's interesting because my experience has been vastly different in that aspect. I did, the first time I went to the temple, I did notice the idea of queens and priestesses and things like that. And I kind of got excited. I thought they were actually going to tell me some more, but it kind of ended there. And in the temple ceremony, there's only one woman represented and she's mostly silent, and that's Eve. And so I felt like, wait, where's Mother? I mean, you're giving me a hint that there is some balance in some sense to what you're saying by using words like queen and priestess and so forth, but where is she? I felt an absence and a lack.
You know, I think one thing is that a lot of us, a lot of the time when we go to the temple, we go do an endowment session. And I think that some of the strongest balance is actually in the initiatories, in the washings and the anointings, in particular because it's all females there. And I know people could make the argument that that's done for modesty's sake, but the fact also remains that it's all females and that ordinances are done by females. And so I think there is a very strong message there, whether it's verbal or whether it's implied, about the balance, about the female power that we have or have the potential to have. And so I really like initiatories, honestly. I think I might get more out of that than out of a regular endowment session.
Yeah, I'd agree with you on that one for sure.
I wanted to read a short quote from the very end of that article I mentioned, the Kevin Barney's article, How to Worship Mother in Heaven Without Getting Excommunicated. He talks about the temple, and when he gets to the very end, he says, "In short, I can think of no finer, more profound way to worship our mother in heaven than to participate in temple worship. And I have never known a bishop or stake president to excommunicate anyone for spending too much time serving in the temple." I think sometimes people, they remember that talk from President Hinckley about, you know, about not praying to mother, and they get really concerned about, well, I want to acknowledge mother, but what are appropriate ways to acknowledge or worship her? And, you know, what can I do and still stay on the right side of the church kind of thing, you know, without stepping on any toes or crossing any lines. And I think that's a really good point about temple worship, is that's something that I think is safe even for the most conservative Orthodox, you know, someone who's not comfortable with, I guess, stepping outside of strict orthodoxy at all, but still wants to acknowledge and worship mother. The realization that going to the temple, if you feel that that is a symbol of her or worship of her, then that can validly be a symbol and a worship of our Heavenly Mother. So you had mentioned, and I hadn't prepared a lot on this, but you'd mentioned that you wanted me to touch on the serpent.
Would you talk a little bit about
that? Yeah, and I can mention that just briefly, that it's not one that I personally have connected with, but the serpent has been used as a goddess symbol from ancient times. Some people may be familiar with the ancient, I believe she's a Minoan goddess from Crete, I think. She has, you know, it's a little carving, and she has her two outstretched arms, and she has a snake in each hand. And the snake was a symbol for several things. It was seen as a symbol of eternity, or rather a particular snake called the Ouroboros, which is a snake that's in a circle biting its own tail. And that was seen as a symbol for eternity, the way that a snake could shed its skin and continue to live. It was, you know, the regeneration, sort of rebirth. That was something that some ancient cultures had latched onto. And so they saw the snake as sort of an eternal creature, and therefore it must be a wise creature. And so they equated it with the goddess a lot. This was something I learned more recently, was the Kundalini tradition, Kundalini yoga. The Kundalini was a serpent that was sort of, I guess, contained within a particular chakra. I don't know my chakras very well. But essentially that the serpent was used as a symbol of the feminine power within a person. And there was another chakra, which was, I believe, a more male representation. And by awakening and tuning into all of them, you could find that balance and that unity between them. In Dance of the Dissident Daughter, she brought up the idea that maybe the serpent in the Garden of Eden being a negative symbol was something that was done by scribes at whatever stage, because they were trying to discredit females and feminine wisdom. And so they made the snake the bad guy in that story. And then, of course, they told that story everywhere. And so people latched on to not just the idea of Eve as bad because she ate the fruit, but also the serpent was bad. And so that really discredited all of the ancient goddess traditions. And I thought that was an interesting take on it. Like I said, I haven't personally connected with the serpent thing as much, and so I haven't studied it as much, but there's certainly a lot out there linking the serpent with the ancient goddess traditions.
So something that you seem to have come back to several times is that part of the purpose in gathering symbols is to look for things that are meaningful to you specifically, rather than necessarily having to take symbols from other people. You can even sort of create your own symbols.
I really think that whatever is significant to you is the most valid symbol. You know, at the beginning when I was talking about symbols, I mentioned the wedding ring. Not all couples wear a ring. You know, some couples might do something else that is significant for them and it still represents their marriage because it works better for them. And, you know, I'm all in favor of finding what works for you in terms of symbolism. It might be, I mean, there are a lot of living things and maybe it's a flower or a tree or a place. There's one symbol that I've personally connected to, which is a gemstone. It happens to be my birthstone. And, it, you know, a lot of gemstones are attributed certain qualities or powers. And this one just kind of spoke to me in terms of the qualities. For me, it made a connection to how I perceive Heavenly Mother and, you know, and it being my birthstone as well. I sort of made that connection of finding myself in Mother or Mother in myself. I feel that connection. And I think, like I said, the point is finding a symbol that works for you. My symbols might not work for someone else, and someone else might find a symbol that doesn't work for me at all. But my hope as we were doing this podcast was to maybe present a lot of ideas that people might be able to connect to or that might feed their thought processes in finding their own meaningful symbols. Because when you realize that Heavenly Mother as a name that way is not the only way to conceive of Heavenly Mother. That when you see trees or when you see the moon or when you see the ocean or running water or when you go to the temple or all of these different kinds of things, they can remind you of Heavenly Mother. And just a couple of weeks ago, my baby was sad again. It seems like those nights always come up with little ones. He was just having a hard time falling asleep. It was the middle of the night, so everybody else was asleep, and I didn't want to stay in the bedroom because I didn't want to wake anybody else. And so I carried him out to the living room, and I was walking with him and rocking him, and he wasn't really upset. He just didn't want anything to do with sleep. And so I was holding him, and I looked out the window, and there was this beautiful full moon out there. And I pointed out there, and I said, "See, there's the moon, and that reminds us that we have a mother in heaven that loves us." And then I said, you know, when the sun comes up in the daytime, we can remember that we have a father in heaven that loves us too. But when we see the moon, we can, you know, we can remember that she loves you just like I love you and I'm holding you and I really, really want you to go to sleep. But, you know, I think sometimes it's those little things are everywhere around us. And if we let the sacred be part of our everyday life, I don't think that that cheapens the sacred. I think it just makes our lives more sacred.
That's wonderful. So as our listeners go to look for symbols, they can take not only symbols that you've talked about with water and trees and the moon and the earth and some of the different goddess symbols, Asherah and wisdom and the temple and serpents. I think I got them all. But they can also look for other symbols and start to create some meaningful ways to remember Mother for themselves. Mm-hmm. This has been a wonderful discussion. Do you have any last things you want to add for our listeners?
You know, like I said, I think the most important thing is to find a symbol that speaks to you and, you know, to realize that there's a lot of things that can be symbols. And probably if you're looking for a symbol, you'll find something or several somethings that do speak to you that with the connection, you know, you sort of make the mental connection and think, oh, how have I not noticed this all my life? Because it seems so obvious and so perfect and so right.
I'd like to invite our listeners, if you have a symbol that has been especially meaningful for you to help you connect with the Divine Feminine, if you could talk about it in the comments so that we can share more of these symbols with each other, that would be really wonderful.
I would love that. I'd love to be a part of that conversation.
Thanks for listening to Daughters of Mormonism. I invite you to respond at daughtersofmormonism.blogspot.com. If you have ideas for future episodes, I'd love to hear about them. Thanks to Kevin McLeod for the music.